The following is a recording for the onboarding webinar one call under conference leader Paul Tedrick with the American Hospital Association of Chicago on Tuesday, April 8, 2014 at 1 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the first onboarding webinar for Cohort 8 of On the Cusp Stop Cotty. We're so excited that you've joined us on today's call, which is going to focus on the process of building your unit team. My name is Ashley Hoffman, and I'm a research specialist here at the Health Research and Educational Trust, and I support the Stop Cotty project. Real quick, before we begin today's call, just a reminder that this is a webinar, so be sure to log in to the webinar link to see the slides today. If you don't have that webinar link, you can download the slides from the project website and follow along with us. The website is on the cusp. StopHAI.org. You can click the green bar in the middle that says Stop Cotty. You'll see a drop-down list appear, and then click Educational Sessions, then Onboarding Calls. Today's presenters are Dr. Mohammed Faqih and Dr. Barbara Lucas. Dr. Faqih is a professor of medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine in Detroit. He is board certified in internal medicine, infectious diseases, and quality with a subspecialty in patient safety. He is also the hospital epidemiologist and medical director of infection prevention and control at St. John Hospital and Medical Center in Detroit. Dr. Faqih serves as the National Infectious Diseases Physician Leader for Ascension Health, a system comprised of more than 100 hospitals. I'm also pleased to welcome Dr. Barbara Lucas, a pediatrician with over 20 years' experience in hospital and healthcare system administration. She has served as a consultant to the Michigan Hospital Association Keystone Center on both the National CLABSI and CAUTI collaboratives, as well as initiatives on patient safety, health literacy, and patient and family engagement. And without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Lucas to the call today.
Thank you, Ashley. If you could go ahead and advance the slides for me. I'd like to welcome all of you to our call. We're really happy that you are able to join us today to get an introduction to this collaborative. And we wanted to start out by working on helping you understand how do you build a successful team, and importantly, why are we doing this work? As many of you know, there are two goals for the CAUTI collaborative. First, to improve the culture of safety on your unit using the model of the Comprehensive Unit-Based Safety Program, also known as CUSP, and secondly, to reduce your individual unit's CAUTI rate by 25% over the course of the collaborative. And both of these goals require strong commitment at both the unit level and at your organizational leadership level, and we'll be talking through how you can achieve that commitment through building a successful team. Next slide, please. First, it's important for you to be convinced that this team needs to be multidisciplinary. Now, why do we say that? From our experience working with other states that have preceded you in this work, we found that there are so many roles in this project that it's too great a burden for one individual person who may then be perceived as the unit's quality police, and we definitely don't want your team leader to be perceived in that role. We also have found that for teams that are unable to get a multidisciplinary group together and essentially tell us we are a team of one and I'm that person, it becomes too great a risk for burnout for that individual person to try to carry this work alone. So what we're asking you to do as you begin this collaborative with us is to pull together a group of individuals that are all committed to work on this together with you. And the required people that we're looking for you to recruit are a team leader, a champion from nursing, a champion from your medical staff, an executive partner, frontline nurses from your floor, and an infection preventionist. Now, many of the teams that we work with also include case managers, discharge planners, and other people in different roles. But at a minimum, those bulleted roles that you see on this slide are the ones that we feel are crucial for you to have success as a unit team. Next slide. We're going to now walk through each of these individuals and give you some sense of who you're looking for to fill these roles, what we expect them to do, and what the specific tasks will be for each of these individuals. So if we start, first of all, with the team leader for your CAUTI project, this person should be an opinion leader on your floor who's already shown to everybody else on your floor that they are committed to patient safety. They should be a team player that has the respect of other people and also empowered by leadership. They also need to have strong organizational management and communication skills to fulfill the roles that we're asking of them. And what are those roles? First of all, your team leader will need to recruit the team members and help them understand what their part is in the project. They have to be able to understand and clearly articulate the two project goals that we talked about. Again, improving your unit's culture of safety and reducing the CAUTIs through the technical work of the project on your unit. They have to be willing to delegate tasks and hold other people accountable and lead your team meetings, which we're hoping you will hold at least once a month, and participate in the other collaborative activities to meet the project requirements. And finally, this team leader will be the person that we hold accountable to track the project progress on your floor. Next slide. So the specific tasks that this person will be called on to do are first to explain the project to unit staff in the management team. In terms of the technical work of reducing the infections on your floor, this person will be responsible to ensure that the staff are educated about CAUTIs and the appropriate indications for catheter use. They also will be responsible to facilitate the development of a process on your floor to review every day the appropriateness of catheter use for those patients on your floor that have a catheter. In terms of the culture work, they will be responsible to implement the CUSP model by ensuring that the staff is educated about patient safety and knows how to use the tools that are in the CUSP model to improve teamwork and patient safety. And you will be hearing more about those CUSP tools on future onboarding calls. Next slide. The specific tasks also include data management, and this includes being familiar with the data collection schedule that we're asking you to cooperate with to ensure that there is timely collection and submission of the data for a number of elements, including your team's readiness assessment and the hospital survey on patient safety at the beginning of the project, the ongoing outcome and process data collection and submission throughout the 18 months of the project, and the team checkup tool that you'll hear about on the data call that we will have scheduled for you shortly. In terms of sustainability, as the project moves forward, this person will be accountable to support the integration of the CUSP and CAUTI project initiatives into your daily workflow and unit operations so that this project doesn't end when the collaborative ends, but instead changes the way you do work on your floor to make care safer for your patients. Next slide. In addition to the team lead, we need a nurse champion, and this person will be responsible for facilitating the education of other nurses on your floor. This includes developing and sharing expertise in the technical skills to reduce CAUTI in regard to insertion and maintenance of catheters, for example, the adaptive work of the CUSP model to improve teamwork and patient safety on the unit, and they will be accountable to promote the goals and interventions of the project not only on your unit, but within the larger organization. Finally, this person will serve as a role model for nurse empowerment because nurses are absolutely crucial to the success of this CAUTI work. Next slide. So who are we looking for in the nurse champion that you choose? Again, this person needs to be very strong in their organizational management and communication skills. They should be known to have a strong commitment to patient safety. They should be respected by their peers and advocate on behalf of nurses and have excellent rapport with the medical staff. Preferably, this champion should come from your floor. It could be your nurse manager, a charge nurse, a nurse educator, or a frontline nurse. Now, some of the units that we've worked with in the past have used instead a nurse from the organization at large. For example, a quality improvement professional or infection control infection prevention professional, or sometimes their chief nursing officer. But it's much more preferred on our end that this person be someone from your unit who intimately knows the culture on your floor, who knows the doctors who admit to your floor, and who's respected by the nurses that are doing the patient care on your floor. Next slide. So what are the tasks that we'll then expect from the physician champion? This person, similar to what we've asked from the nursing champion, will be responsible for the education of the medical staff about the appropriate indications for urinary catheter use. They will serve as the liaison to promote the goals and interventions of the project to the doctors on your floor who admit to your floor and who will be managing the catheters on your floor, as well as to the general hospital medical staff. And they will be actively working with your team and other physicians to develop and implement strategies as you identify barriers to this work. As you begin to round for the appropriateness of catheters, you will find that there are certain physicians or certain physician departments or teams that are more resistant to prompt removal of catheters, and this physician champion can be your advocate to interface with those physicians and help explain to them the work of the project, the HCPAC indicators, and why this work is so important to improve safety for the patients that you're all caring for. Next slide. So the person that you choose for this role, again, needs to have strong communication and quality improvement skills. They should be empowered by leadership and, most importantly, respected by their medical staff peers and the nursing staff as well. They should demonstrate a spirit of collegiality to all the members on your team. And the possible choices you could consider could be a urologist, an infectious disease specialist, a hospitalist. You may have a quality or patient safety officer that you think is appropriate, or any physician that you work with that is interested in improving safety and quality. Next slide. In terms of your executive partner, we will expect from them that they advocate for the project goals and the team with other senior leadership, as well as your governing body or your board for your hospital. They should be meeting regularly with your team to review your data and your progress, and assist the team with prioritizing any safety defects that get recognized in the course of your work. This is the person that you will be asking to do executive rounds with you on your unit as part of the cusp work for the project. So you will be expected to be spending time with this person at least monthly, not only to round on your floor, but also to review your data and your progress in this work. This person also will be very important to your team in terms of helping to remove barriers that you may run across in the course of your work. That could be staffing issues, it could be equipment issues, such as having sufficient bedside commodes for your unit, and they can be a great advocate for your team as long as they understand the importance of the work and they have bought into this collaboration that you've chosen to do. And finally, your executive partner will be a great person to share your project's progress with other senior leadership and your board. Next slide. The ideal characteristics for this executive partner are that they have strong communication skills and that they're approachable and willing to commit time to this project. They should already have demonstrated to you and to the hospital at large that they are committed to patient safety and quality improvement, and that they have the respect of their peers and others with commitment to safety. So potential candidates could include your chief medical officer, your chief nursing officer, or your chief quality or patient safety officer. Next slide. Finally, we want to talk about engaging frontline nurses as part of your team. We would expect those nurses to be responsible for inspiring the commitment of other nurses on the unit to the goals of this project, both the culture work and the technical work with the catheters to reduce cavities. They will be the ones that help to educate their peers formally in presentations as well as by their example. They also will be the ones that will help your team to identify practical ways to ensure that catheters are inserted properly and maintained properly. They will be the ones that talk through what's the best way that we can daily assess catheter necessity, and they can help you design that rounding process or integrate that rounding process into existing rounds. They will be responsible to improve teamwork with physicians and other staff members and ultimately to make your unit safer for patients. So it's crucial that you have people that are on your floor working with those patients and their families every day as part of your team to design these processes and to make sure that they're built into their daily routines. Next slide. So the type of person that you're looking for, again, needs to have strong teamwork and communication skills, strong commitment to patient safety, and very importantly, sufficient experience or tenure on that unit so that people know them and respect them and will listen to the educational areas that they introduce to them and also to advocate for them if they're running into any barriers with this work. They should be practical, flexible, and willing to speak up and not intimidated by medical staff. You will hear often in the onboarding calls that we do with you in the future about how important it is for nurses to drive this entire process for reducing catheter use on the units. But that does involve speaking up with the medical staff, finding out who their advocates are in the medical staff, and leveraging that to make sure that we're only using catheters when absolutely necessary. Next slide. Finally, the remaining role that we'd like to see you build into your team is that of the infection preventionist. This person will be expected to meet regularly with your team to review your data and your progress, and they often may be the person that you decide to designate as the one that will collect the data and enter the data. As you've heard on some of the introductory calls, you will be collecting the number of counties on your unit, your patient days, and catheter days, and often that role is given to your infection preventionist. So you have to have someone that's comfortable doing that. But perhaps more importantly, they will be serving as your content expert or infection prevention consultant to your team to help you understand HCPCS guidelines, to moderate and review whether or not this is in fact a county and is it in fact attributable to your unit. They will help your team think about and develop and implement and monitor appropriate infection prevention strategies and communicate the project goals and progress as appropriate in wider infection prevention meetings throughout the hospital and in other settings across your campus. So they're a resource to you on your floor as well as to the hospital at large to help people understand the work that you're doing and to spread it throughout your institution. Next slide. The ideal characteristics for this infection preventionist, again, a team player with good communication skills, and they should be very knowledgeable about the county definitions, the HCPCS guidelines, and evidence-based infection prevention practices regarding catheter use. Next slide. So just to summarize, before you begin your work on the collaborative, it's important to think about these key issues. Do you have commitment from your leadership? Are they aware that you're starting your work in the county collaborative, and have they endorsed it? Have you shared the two project goals, the goal of reducing counties and improving the safety culture on your unit, both on your floor and within your organization? And do you feel that you're ready to build a multidisciplinary team rather than just handing this project off to one person? Are you able and ready to communicate the technical work and changes needed to your stakeholders, principally your nurses and physicians on your floor? Are you ready to build a rounding process to check for catheter appropriateness, not just medical record review, but actually rounding every day to see if there's a catheter in place and is it still necessary? And can you commit to regular data submission and review? Next slide. Because we know from our work with other units that have joined the collaborative prior to Cohort 8 that to achieve both the culture goal and the county reduction goal, you definitely need a multidisciplinary unit-level team, strong backing from your organizational leadership, a respected and effective team leader, and at least one committed physician and nurse champion that will drive this work, because both nursing and physician ownership of the work is necessary to make care safer for your patients. I'm now going to turn the presentation over to Dr. Fee, who will continue on talking about the technical work of the project. Dr. Fee?
Thank you very much, Dr. Lucas. Next slide, please. You know, in fact, just to let you know, I think the main issue is the first 20 slides. I think a huge aspect of this work is really the behavioral one and having committed champions to the work. So my part is a little bit easier, in fact, because it's just the technical aspect, which is kind of well established. So we're going to start with the indications for catheter use, and what we've done in cohort 1 through 8 so far is we adopted the national guidelines, the CDC HCPCS guidelines that were published in 2009 for appropriate urinary catheter use. Next slide. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, this is the table that discusses all of them. I'm going to just list them, and then I will be addressing each one by itself. So So these guidelines were consensus guidelines that were brought by an expert panel. And what they had is six different indications, appropriate indications, that they recommended to use Pecaster for. And they also listed some uses that are not appropriate or not consistent with what we consider as acceptable indications. So those that are appropriate indications are urinary retention or bladder outlet obstruction. It makes quite a bit of sense, you know, because of not being able to empty the bladder. The other one is the need for accurate measurements of urinary output in the critically ill patients, and I'm going to discuss a little bit more about what critically ill means. The third one is related to surgical cases, and it had 4 points, and it's the perioperative use in certain surgeries. One of them would be urologic or surgeries that are close to the urinary tract. The other one is for prolonged duration of surgery. Third one is when the surgery is anticipating a large amount of fluids to be given. And the last one is if there's another need for intraoperative monitoring of urinary output. So this is three indications. The fourth indication is to assist healing of open wounds that are close to the groin area. And the fifth one is prolonged immobilization related to either trauma or a risk of decompensation if you move the patient. It's usually like motor vehicle accidents. The last one is end-of-life care, and it really depends if it's needed by the patient or not. And they listed some inappropriate uses, including those uses that are for convenience for either the patient or nursing, or you know even physician, you know healthcare worker. Also for diagnostic tests, if there's another way to do it, and post-operative use, which has been really much better now with SCIP enforcing a lot of the removal early post-operative. Next slide, please. So when we talk about acceptable indications, what I've been suggesting is that each institution defines what's acceptable for them or to them. And when this happens, it's going to be much harder for practitioners to say, well, I don't believe in this. So each institution will define what are the appropriate indications and hopefully base their indications on the HCPCS guidelines. And then you'll have hopefully much less resistance to adoption by clinicians, and it will help the physician champion and the nurse champions have at least some ammunition to support their work. Next, please. So the more clear these indications are, the better. So we talked about different indications, but it's not enough to just say, you know, for critically ill patients, what does critically ill mean? Or, you know, perioperative monitoring in surgeries, what does this mean? So if we define very clearly what each of these items means, then it will be much easier for those that are doing the audits and also the healthcare workers to figure out if a catheter is indicated or not. Next, please. Let's start with accurate measurement of urinary output in critically ill patients. We see this indication applicable to the intensive care unit. And when we started the work initially, we had a lot of discussion about the critically ill on the floor. But it was really tough to figure out if we look at the critically ill on the floor, would we, you know, which one would we consider as critically ill? Is it someone who's 95 years old who needs a catheter because, you know, he looks very frail, or someone who is on, you know, an incredible amount of fluids with severe sepsis being resuscitated and going to the ICU? So what we decided at that point very early on is that critically ill would be someone who you are taking care of as if he's in an intensive care unit. and looked more at the ICU as the critically ill area. We have discussed this with different authorities also within the country, and very similar views about the critically ill definition. Next, please. So at acute urinary retention or obstruction, there are two ways to look at it, those that have outflow obstruction and those that have acute urinary retention not related to an obstruction. And there are different reasons for each of them. So for outflow obstruction, the common one would be prostatic hypertrophy with obstruction or urethral stricture or obstruction. And sometimes if there's hematuria and clots, this can cause also obstruction. On the other hand, the acute urinary retention may be medication-related or related to a medical issue such as neurogenic bladder or a trauma, let's say trauma, motor vehicle accident where they have an injury to the spinal cord. Next, please. The difference between the two, the urinary retention that's outflow obstruction versus retention, which is medication or neurogenic, is that the second one, the neurogenic bladder or medication-related, you can use for a period of time a straight cathing or in and out, and you avoid having a urinary catheter in, versus the first one is much harder. So this is another thing you can consider when you're doing your intervention in your hospital. The next appropriate indication is the perioperative use in selected surgeries. And you can look at it in two different ways. One is in intraoperative, and the other one is surgical site, where the surgery is going to be done. So for intraoperative use, it would be either because the duration of surgery is prolonged and you'll need to monitor the for fluids, or if you're giving very large infusions of fluids during that surgery. These are the main issues for intraoperative, and rarely would you need to keep the catheter much after the surgery is done. For the surgical site, urologic surgery is often using urine catheters and other surgeries close to the genital urinary tract. So we see them as a little bit different from each other, these two items. Next, please. Now, what about spinal or epidural anesthesia? And this was listed under the potential inappropriate use of urinary catheters. And the reason why it may be looked at as inappropriate is that not every patient who has an epidural anesthesia will end up needing a urinary catheter. So it really depends if the patient develops urinary retention. What is worrisome is that if we use the epidural anesthesia or spinal anesthesia for a prolonged period of time, what you may end up having is two things. First, you may end up having urinary retention, but the other thing that we less often talk about is that these epidural catheters can risk infection at the epidural catheter site. So it is pretty important to look at these catheters, and directly after surgery, think about removing these catheters because of the risk related to both devices. Next, please. Assisting healing with a perineal or sacral wounds in incontinent patients. A long time ago when we started doing the work at my facility, a lot of the nurses and even physicians used to think incontinence is an indication for urinary catheter placement. And it took us some time to change that when we bundled it with other interventions to reduce the risk of skin injury or damage. But many healthcare workers may think that regular incontinence is an indication for a Foley. And incontinence happens to a lot of patients when they're at home, elderly, so it's not an indication for a urinary catheter. So the only time when we see it as an indication is if it's coupled with skin breakdown in the perineum, and you have a risk if you don't have the catheter in that skin breakdown will worsen. So that's how we should view that indication. Next, please. Hospice, you know, comfort care, end of life care, thoughts care. This is going to be a tough decision. Thinking about this patient population, having a catheter in will increase the risk for infection. So we really should not be placing it unless it's going to make a huge difference as far as their comfort, the patient's comfort. Next, please. The required immobilization for trauma and surgery, this, you know, the examples would be an unstable thoracic or lumbar spine. So a neurosurgeon comes in and looks at the patient and says that, you know, if this patient moves, they may end up having worsening of the injury, or multiple traumatic injuries such as pelvic fractures, and you're worrying that, you know, again, movement will worsen the condition of the patient. This is not related to immobility, that's related to someone who is debilitated. They're completely different. Immobility related to being frail or debilitated is not an indication. In fact, urinary catheters will make people more immobile, and it may end up resulting in worse outcomes. Next, please. The issue of the chronic urinary catheter, so, you know, you're an ED nurse or an ED physician, you get someone coming from the nursing home, and there's no documentation why the catheter has been there. It may have been for a month, 2 months, a year, 2 years, and there's no documentation. And this is a tough issue. We do suggest that that these patients need to be evaluated for appropriateness, but we need to get more information about why they had the catheter. And I think it's very important for them to have a good follow-up and to make sure that the catheter was not placed without an appropriate reason. If it is the case and the catheter does not have an appropriate reason, then discontinuation of the catheter and watching the patients for retention is important. Next, please. Some of the unacceptable reasons for placement. So as we discussed initially, urine output outside of the ICU, the main areas may be someone who has congestive heart failure. They are requiring some oxygen supplementation, but they're not ICU material, the cardiologist wants to follow up on their eyes and nose. Another place would be for someone who has been recently diagnosed to have an acute renal failure, and the nephrologist wants to do like a 24-hour urine collection. There are other means for us to collect and consider instead of having a catheter that can lead to infection and also trauma. Incontinence, I did talk about incontinence. It should not be a reason to place catheter in. The prolonged postoperative use was then breast that there was a push-through skip on removing the catheter within 2 days of the surgery. I think the surgeons have done a great job in being cognizant of this, and there has been an improvement on the surgical wards. Other places which are quite interesting, you know, the transition from ICU to floor. ICU is a very high utilization place. The floor is a lower utilization place. So the ICU may have 50 to 80% of their patients with a urinary catheter. And on the floor, it can range between, in fact, some units in our hospital have like 5%. So let's say 10 to 15%. Our national cohort has higher than that. They have about 18 to 20% utilization on the floor. You know, you see a huge change from the ICU and the floor. And it makes quite a bit of sense that at the time of discharge or transfer from the ICU, evaluation for the catheter is very important, and if it's not needed, remove it. So you may see these patients on the floor coming from the ICU, and they did not have their catheter out. Morbid obesity is another inappropriate reason to place catheter. Confusion of dementia and patient request. Dementia, if a patient has dementia and they have incontinence, there's no reason when they come to a hospital to have a catheter, and they've been living without a catheter at home. The the other thing is that we really have to, and I think I'm being a little bit redundant here, but if we clearly define all the indications to avoid using the catheter inappropriately, it makes much easier for those that are doing the work. Next, please. So we talked about the indications and how do we create a process to evaluate urinary catheter need, and a lot of this has been based on work that has been done a long time ago with nurse-driven work at our facility, where engaging the nursing staff through mother's screening rounds makes, hopefully at the end, the regular nurse, the bedside nurse, own the process of taking care of the patient and looking at whether the catheter is needed or not. So initially we educate the nursing staff on the appropriate urinary catheter utilization. We provide them with educational materials, whether they're lectures, posters, bucket cards. And it doesn't have to be all of them, but you know, you can choose whatever is most feasible for your institution. The main thing, however, is that whoever is engaging, whoever is the champion engaging the nurses, that they discuss, you know, case by case, the indications for urinary catheter use with the nurses. What you're trying to do is you're increasing the importance of reducing the harm risk for these patients by highlighting whether a patient has a catheter or not, and then asking if there's a reason, true reason for use, and if it's not, then to remove that catheter. And with time, the nursing staff will feel that the natural part is not to have the catheter in, not the opposite. Next, please. So these are examples. The stuff in yellow are pocket cards. We had posters, the stop poster, the remove that urinary catheter poster, remove unnecessary urinary catheters poster. So we had different ones, and these can be customized to your hospital, and they're downloadable from the on the custom.com website. Next, please. So the healthcare worker is usually a nurse. When we started writing this, we had kind of a different view. We thought more about the infection preventionist or quality improvement person. But honestly, the closer that person to the unit people, the better it is. So a nurse would be, probably the best. And that nurse needs to be knowledgeable on the indications for urinary catheter utilization. And that person will participate in the daily nursing rounds. I'm not going to repeat these things because Dr. Lucas has done a wonderful job presenting them. But you have the members of the team present. The nurse manager's role is to make sure that everyone knows this is something very important as far as patient safety to our unit. And he or she will give the support to that work, so everyone knows that the catheter being there without a reason is not acceptable. The bedside nurses are key because they're the ones that will adopt this process and on the long run be the champions for their patients. Next, please. So the question is triggered. Does the patient have a urinary catheter? And if it is yes, then the other question is, why does the patient have the catheter? What's the reason? A lot of times they may say, oh, I don't know, or because they're incontinent, or because whatever. And then what needs to be done is discuss what are the appropriate indications, what are not the appropriate indications. And, even if that nurse, the bedside nurse says, you know, it's incontinence, what would need to be done by that champion is to push for how to mitigate the issue with incontinence. So if you have someone who's incontinent, how can I make the life of that bedside nurse a little bit easier and at the same time not have that catheter used for incontinence? So provide some, provide the nurse, the bedside nurse, with some solutions to these barriers that he or she is visualizing. And you continue that process. Initially, you do it more often. Then hopefully you do it maybe a little bit less often, but at least do some audits. What you want to make sure is that at the end, the patient's bedside nurse will own the process, so there wouldn't be any loss of your benefits that you gained during implementation. Next, please. So the key factor of success is the nurse manager supporting the initiative, because this would look like the leader, holding the nursing staff accountable. The facilitator is the one that will be discussing these issues with the cats or with the nurses, so you have that champion that is discussing why do we have the catheter in and what are the the other options. Okay, next please. So the final end result would be that the bedside nurse will own the process and will check on the catheter need every day and in fact every shift, and I'm going to show you some data. And that's your goal. So the bedside nurse at least needs to know if the patient has a catheter or not and what the indication is. And this will be when he or she is prompted, okay, does the patient have a catheter and they don't know. They remember the next time when they're going to have these rounds, these questions will be asked so that they'll look a little bit further. So what you're trying to do is change their behavior. And the best way to do it is to integrate it into the patient's daily nursing assessment. A successful way to do it is through the EMR. Next, please. So it's not enough to just tell them, okay, it's not an indication, don't put the catheter in. Because even if you say that to a healthcare worker and you don't provide solution, it is very likely that there won't be any good progress in reducing catheter utilization. You need to give them solutions. So, for example, if someone is incontinent, bundle the changing for incontinence with skin care and turning. If someone needs fluid monitoring, offer either urinals, hats, or weighing for these patients. Next, please. So let's say you're at the facility where you cannot have nursing rounds or mother's spray rounds. Do you have any other options? And what we've seen is different, people are quite innovative, and they look at their units, and then they figure out what's the best way to do it. The main thing is to push for that change in evaluation of need for the urine catheter. So you can have a nurse champion who would go with each nurse, one on one, and say, okay, do you have any patients with catheter? Tell me about your 6 patients or 7 patients who had a catheter, who doesn't, and then ask about that, reason for use. I've seen another unit, and this is at our facility, where the nurse manager, in fact, and the PA, physician assistant, rounded on patients daily to evaluate the devices. It was a trauma regular floor unit, and whenever they did not find a reason, they discontinued the catheter. Now, what's not good about this is that the nurse is not owning the catheter evaluation. It's the nurse lead in that situation. So it may work in certain areas, but what you'd worry about is what will happen if that process where the nurse manager stops doing it, what would happen to the evaluation of the catheter. So you'd like it to be that the nurse, the bedside nurse, would be the owner of that work. Next, please. Okay, another one is looking at different units and what I do call a multidisciplinary, multidepartmental approach. So So you work with other units in the ED or ICU, but also at time of admission to that unit or transfer, you know, when you're evaluating a new patient coming into your unit, make sure that these devices are not kept if they're no longer needed. The multidisciplinary approach is partnering with other stakeholders, so case managers worked very well for our hospital. And when we did this was 2006, urinary catheter issues and CAUTI was not a popular thing. But the way we sold our case was that keeping a urinary catheter to the last day would give you about 6 hours of keeping the patient in, because you need to wait for them to empty their bladder or urinate after removal of the catheter. The physical therapist, we talked to them about ambulation, and that the catheter would lead to immobility. The wound care nurses, we talked about the pressure ulcers related to the Foley catheter itself. If, for those that have seen, a lot of cases, you know that sometimes the catheter itself can cause pressure ulcer on the thigh. So the infection preventionist is, of course, catheter-associated urinary tract infection, inappropriate utilization of antibiotics for asymptomatic bacteriuria, and decreasing C. diff. There are a lot of things that you can make your case to a lot of stakeholders. You can't imagine how many people are involved with the urinary catheter. Next, please. So what are the important issues? You want to see a reduction in urinary catheter utilization, and this is the marker for your program success. And the longer the catheter is in, the higher your chances or risk for CAUTI. So it is important, if you have a catheter where the physician was resistant to removal the first day, second day, third day, I would never quit, because the longer the catheter is in, the higher the chances for that patient to get an infection. So you don't want that catheter to be staying for a prolonged period of time, and it's still very worth it to address this daily. Next, please. And as I said, the ICUs have high prevalence. You know, intervening in the ICU is very important. Some of you may be ICU teams. And when we look at the ICU, it needs to be like the floor evaluation of the catheter every single day for need. And, of course, at exits from the unit. The ED, we're doing a wonderful intervention in the ED. I think we have more than 150 EDs so far that are part of this. And it does work. We just recently published a paper on 18 hospitals where there was a reduction of about a third in utilization in the ED. So these are areas that you may want to look at. The operating room is another one, talking to the surgical leaders and nursing leaders in the ICU, in the OR, and making sure that the catheters are only placed when they're needed for surgery. And if they're needed for surgery, they can either remove them directly in the OR after the case is done, or in the post-anesthesia care unit. Next, please. So we're summing the presentation. So how to get successful results: both the nurses and the physicians should evaluate the indications for urinary catheter utilization. The physicians should promptly discontinue catheters when no longer needed. We don't want this to be only a nursing effort. I think it's a partnership between nurses and physicians. Nurses evaluating catheters and finding no indications should contact the physician for promptly removing catheter. There are certain hospitals that have evaluation by nursing and automatic discontinuation through an order set or standing orders that would even bypass the call for the physician. And depending on the culture you have in your facility, you may consider something like this. Partner with different disciplines such as case management, nursing, infection prevention to successfully achieve your goals. Next, please. And identify, so how to sustain your success. You have to make sure, and we have a presentation later on about sustainability, but what you need to do is hardwire your work. And I think the best way is to make sure it's part of the nursing routine every single day. Incorporating it into the electronic medical record is very important. There are a couple questions that can be asked every time if they're doing nursing rounds. Does the patient have a catheter? And what's the reason for use? And if you want to use it as a, you know, more global thing, you can look at all devices in these units. You know, does the patient have a central line, a urinary catheter, and what's the reason? So it'll be a patient safety issue rather than only a one device issue. And give feedback on performance to nurse managers, you know, related to the prevalence of utilization. It is very important for people to know how they're doing. If you don't tell them how they're doing, they may not think that it's working, or they may think it is completely fine and they don't pay attention to it. And if there's no improvement in utilization, then look at the appropriateness when you do your audits and see if there's a trend. And the final result is to have really the bedside nurses owning the process of the evaluation of catheter need and discontinuing the catheter if it's no longer needed. Next, please. So this is what I was talking to you about the nurses owning the catheter. This is a survey we've done to our nurses, about 230 bedside nurses. And this is after years of work. So our initial work was in 2006. And what we did over time, we did multiple interventions. The first intervention was a nurse-driven multidisciplinary rounds. We went through all the hospital. That was in 2006. Then in 2007, we intervened in the emergency department with much less urinary catheter utilization. And we've had some intervention in the ICU, but on the floor over a very long period of time, till now, we asked them to send us point prevalence on Tuesdays and Thursdays on whether the devices are, you know, whether the patients have a urinary catheter or not. So this is something we did in 2012, and we asked them who is on the unit responsible to verify if a urinary catheter is needed. Now, what I want you to see here that we had multiple answers, and many of them have the nurse as part of it, nurse caring for the patient. More than a third singled out, and these are the nurses caring for the patient, that they are the only people that are responsible. But when you look at the last item, nurse caring for patient, case manager, and nurse manager, 47.6%. You add them all together, it's like very high 90s. It's probably 97% thought that the nurse caring for the patient, the bedside nurse, is the one who's responsible. Now, there may be other people with her or with him, but this is how they viewed it. So they viewed it that they own the catheter evaluation, which is a great thing. So how often does the nursing unit evaluate urinary catheter presence and appropriate need? We had 90% saying daily, which is a great thing. And how, you know, how often per day, so how many shifts, and 83% said all shifts, and 17% said the morning shift. So this is an example that, you know, with hard work, we can reach a situation where the nurse will own the catheter evaluation daily. Next, please. So we asked them about multidisciplinary rounds, if it helps identify and remove no longer needed catheters, and about 83% strongly agreed or agreed about that. So it also was something that they found useful. And this is what I mentioned to you about the point prevalence. Doing urinary catheter prevalence evaluations on Tuesdays and Thursdays helped our unit focus on the removal of unnecessary catheters. Two-thirds strongly agreed or agreed. They didn't view it as strongly as the multidisciplinary rounds because it's more interactive to have multidisciplinary rounds. And that's the beautiful one. The last one is, I'm confident in my knowledge of urinary catheter indications. Almost all of them felt that they're very comfortable with that. They knew the indications. Next, please. So, you know, Dr. Lucas talked about leadership support is crucial. Defining the barriers to implementation is very important. Obtaining physician and nursing buy-in is also very important, and provide alternatives to the Foley catheter. Next, please. So I think this is the last slide. Think about the whole picture. And I talked about the multidisciplinary, multidepartmental approach. It's almost like a synergy. So if we all work in different units on improving appropriateness of castor use, we will see global improvement. This is quite similar to what we're trying to do in the last few months, is pairing emergency departments with inpatient units as far as their intervention, hoping that both will work together to reduce utilization of the catheter that's not necessary. I think this is my last slide. Next, please.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Fickey.
Mm-hmm.
So here are just some references, and I can post them in the discussion area as well. Different resources that are available on the CUSP website to help you in these first steps, so assembling your team, and then also the data collection schedule. And then I want to go over some next steps. So this afternoon, what should you be doing? Fill out your unit team commitment form, and then have your CEO sign that hospital commitment letter. Give those to your state leads. You can also find those pocket cards and posters on our project website. And then the next step, in 2 weeks, right back here, we'll be hosting our second onboarding webinar on April 22nd at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's going to feature Tina Adams and Catherine Allen Bridson that will go over the CAUTI definitions. And I want to open it up now for questions. Operator, can you give the instructions? If anyone
yes,
has questions?
Ma'am. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the 1 key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star 2. Please limit your questions to one at a time. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. And our first question comes from Vera Gabbard with the University of Kentucky.
Yes, this is UK. I have a question. I rounded today in my unit on Foley catheters, which is a cardiovascular thoracic unit, and I want to know what other places have done with people that are on propofol, sedated. I have a patient today that's on Bumex, Nimbex, and propofol that's very sedated and very ill, and her Foley is in, and so what do you suggest doing for people that are sedated and on the ventilator? And this was a woman, too, which makes it that much more difficult.
I can try to answer that. So, there are patients in the intensive care unit that will need the catheter for a certain period of time. What we're looking for, and I admire what you're doing, so you're looking at every single patient. If they're critically ill, then this is an indication for utilization if you want to monitor their eyes and nose. But, I don't expect that person to be, sedated and on the vent for a prolonged period of time. Or even if they're on the vent, but they're improving, then this is a time where we can consider removal of the catheter. What I've tried to do, and we've given this, I think very recently we've given a presentation about the ICU, we can share it with you, I think I gave it to MHA, link it to other things that happen in your ICU. So if the patient is awake and they're intubated and you have an early mobility program, that pushes people to pull that catheter out. We see things like septic shock or, cardiogenic shock, as you will need the catheter for that time. But a few days later, they will improve, and then hopefully you remove that catheter.
Yeah, this is on a person who's been intubated for 5 days. They've had their catheter for 5 days, and they're just too sick to actually come off their sedation yet from sepsis. So I just wondered if you all had any special magic things you could tell me.
I can tell you there's no magic that I have. I don't know, Dr. Lucas, do you have any comments about that?
No, I'd agree with you, Dr. Fickey. That's a very difficult situation, but again, that situation would meet the HCPAC criteria, but it's important that you continue to question, and as Dr. Fickey said, if you're implementing early mobility in your institution and it's at all feasible, to consider if that person can be taken off the catheter gradually as they're waking up and becoming less ill. We want to encourage people to do that and just not be in the mindset that just because they're in the ICU that the catheter is mandatory.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our next question comes from Christina McGruder with the John Muir Health.
Yes, with so much emphasis being put on taking catheters out early wherever needed, I wonder about the interventions of daily catheter care and insertion techniques. And I know you mentioned this earlier, but shouldn't these be given great emphasis also for those patients who may need to have the catheter indwelling longer?
Can you reframe? Can you tell us again what you're looking for? So we talk most of the time about appropriate need, so not to put the catheter in and removing it as soon as possible. So the question is, how do you maintain the catheter? Or
if the catheter does need to be in, is there data that shows proper insertion and daily care, cleaning of the catheter, can reduce CABEs as well? I'm wondering if that shouldn't be an equally great emphasis that we give to our staff members.
Most of the data is related to how long you use the catheter, most of the interventions. The interventions about insertion are not as strong, and we can, review the HCPCS guidelines. They give you the, how the strength of the evidence. It makes complete sense for us to have an aseptic insertion in all hospitalized patients, and also not to break the seal of the urinary catheter for maintenance, and to have an emptying of the bag appropriately, and not to have any introduction of organisms into that closed system. But honestly, the main studies have shown success with reducing utilization, and to a lesser extent the maintenance. The maintenance would not be as strong as reducing utilization. So both are important. What I'm trying to say is we cannot neglect removing the catheter when it's no longer needed.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the 1 key on your touchtone phone now. There are currently no questions in the queue at this time.
All right. While we wait for you guys to come up with these questions for Dr. Fakih and Dr. Lucas, just want to highlight the next call coming up in 2 weeks with Tina Adams and Catherine Allen Goodson. That's going to go over some of the background and key terms of the project. Also, it's going to cover the CDC's NHSN and then talk about the data collected for the project, the outcome and process data. So that's coming up on April 22nd. There's also a listing of the rest of the onboarding calls that we're hosting all the way out through June 18th. So be sure that these are all on your calendar so you can join us.
There are currently no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. And you can also post your questions in the discussion area if you don't want to voice them.
Okay, still currently no questions.
All right. So if there's no more questions, we'll give you guys back 10 minutes of your day today. We do ask if you take a few minutes and fill out the evaluation of today's webinar. That link is on the left side of the screen in the discussion area. At the bottom, it's a SurveyMonkey link. Take a few minutes to give us your feedback about the webinar and the presenters. We really appreciate your feedback on that. I also want to thank Dr. Lucas and Dr. Fakih today for sharing this information with us. And thank you all for joining us. we hope you have a happy and productive afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.